You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction. The My Choice sales event is on. Choose your bonus up to $2,000 bonus cash, up to 1% rate reduction, or up to 3 payments on them. Scarborough Nissan, Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.
Final hour, Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app and online, tsn1050.ca. Brian Hazy, O-Doug, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan, Warren Moon will join us a little bit later in the hour. Football Hall of Famer. We've got two more battles in our Overdrive Madness bracket that we'll play later this hour. And Carlos Boozer is joining us here in just a few moments. Former NBAer, Olympic gold medalist. Been on the show before. Always a great interview. And it's been strange trying to keep track of things, you know, online because it's Groundhog Day right now. Every day just turns over and is the exact same. We're just all in our homes and we're not going anywhere and there's nothing live on TV. There's no sporting events. So tonight, because TSN and Sportsnet have been going back and forth on last year's Raptors playoff run, tonight is the playing of Game 7 versus Philly. So I've noticed, like, Josh Lewenberg, a Raptors reporter, and other Raptors beat guys and girls are like, okay, let's go over our memories of the shot, as if it's the one-year anniversary, but it's not. It's not the one-year anniversary. It's just we're playing Game 7 tonight. And I'll watch. You know, I'll tune in. I'm not going to watch the whole game. I can't watch the whole game. I'm not saying I'm sitting there jacked up. I'm not going to pretend like I've been watching all these games and I can get into them. I know the ball goes in. Like, I hate to be a spoiler. he hits the shot. But, yeah. You know, if I'm on the couch at 9:30 and it's 5 minutes left in the fourth, I'm watching for sure because it's a statue moment. Like, it's a rare moment in time in Toronto sports history where, you know, you'll never forget it.
Well, I'll watch it, the shot for sure. But I always notice when I go back and watch something, you notice something different. You may notice somebody in the stands, their reaction. I'll give you an example. I was watching, you know, the Flames and the Canucks, where Marty Jelena scores in Game 7 in overtime. I think it was in 04-05. And I watched how it unfolded, obviously watched it live. But if you look at Aginla's reaction, I never noticed it before. He actually bangs his stick on the glass and is yelling at a fan, almost like it was like stuffing it in their face. Like, you pick up different things. So if you go and watch it tonight, you may see somebody's reaction that you hadn't noticed before because you're just so focused on the ball going in or Kawhi squatting down.
I think that shot is statue worthy. Like,
it is.
Like, just somewhere out in front. It doesn't have to be right close to Legends Row or the Leafs stuff, but just somewhere around Scotiabank Arena, there should be some kind of statue to commemorate that moment in history. It was such a big moment for the Raptors and Toronto sports. I think that could be... That could be made into a statue. Just, yeah. Kawhi just sitting down with even the guys behind him. That should be a statue somewhere.
I agree. I think that is statue worthy. I think Joe Carter's home run is statue worthy.
No question.
It's him jumping in the air when he you know, when he's rounding the bases or whatever.
Or even him catching the ball at first base, whatever.
Like, right, when he jumps in the air.
Yeah. Yep.
What moment in you're just talking about it, I'm just kinda listening, but what moment in Toronto sports history, outside of, you know, the winning of the World Series and the winning of the NBA Finals, like, what is statue worthy? You're saying the Kawhi shot. You're saying the Carter. What Joey Batts is?
No, I think you got to win. I think you got to win, and I think that's why the Leafs. I mean, they have Legends Row, which that honors individual players, which I think is a great idea, and I've always supported, and I hope they'll add to it over time, which I'm sure they will. But there isn't. Like, the only statue, and I'm not even joking, although I guess I am, is them winning the lottery. Like, Brendan Shanahan standing there beside Bill Daly with the Maple Leaf logo on the first pick. That's the only thing statue-worthy because they actually won something there. I think the Bautista bat flip is a moment in time that we'll never forget. It was incredible. But
they
didn't win. Yeah, the only way you get a statue, man, is if you win. That's why the Carter.
If they won
bomb,
the World Series that year, that's that thing is being.
Yeah, that's the moment.
That's already a statue.
Absolutely, it is. It's right behind Carter It might, yeah, I mean, people would argue the Alomar home run against Oakland in the ALCS in 92 is the biggest home run of all time. It all depends on first base
with his hands up in the air.
Right, when they actually made the playoffs for the first time in 85. I mean, there are a lot of different – it depends on where you are in the generational gap and what you consider to be the biggest moment for you personally as a fan. Mm-hmm. But I think statues, that goes to a champion, and that's why I think the statue of Kawhi and that shot, which was the pinnacle moment of the whole run, more so than anything against Milwaukee or even against Golden State, because of the moment in time. Game 7 at home, clock is expired, rattles off the rim 4 times, and then finally goes in. That is statue-worthy for sure, and the Carter home run or the Carter catch, like you said, in 92 against the Braves, that's it. You know, the Leafs don't have one. They don't.
Yeah.
I don't think you can make a case for any particular moment. So anyway, that's being played tonight, Game 7 against Philly. We know how it played out, but I'm sure a lot of people are looking for something positive right now. And if you're a Raptor fan, watching Kawhi hit that shot and the Raptors punch their ticket into an Eastern Conference final, probably going to supply that positivity for you. We are joined now by longtime NBAer, Olympic gold medalist. He's been on the show before. He's always a great guy to have on. Here is Carlos Boozer. Carlos, how you doing?
Great to be on, guys. How you guys doing? How you guys holding up there?
We're doing okay. Yeah, we're staying safe and healthy, and I guess that's all you can ask for right now. And, you know, we're just saying, prior to having you on, we're occupying our time by reliving the Raptors run from a year ago. Is there one game in your career, like if you could only save that one game tape, is there one game that you would save based on either it being a big win or a big performance, maybe your first game in the NBA? Which one would you keep?
Oh, there's so many games, man, after 13 years in the league. I think if I had to just pick one, it would probably be the gold medal we won in 2008 in China on the Olympic team. I think it was one of those years where, you know, we just had one focus, one goal. Coach K did a great job of putting the team together. We had 12 great players from the NBA that, you know, we had to redeem ourselves from 2004. We lost and got the bronze medal. So the four of us, me, LeBron, D-Wade, and Melo, were on that 04 team. We didn't play a lot. You know, they played most of the veteran guys. Larry Brown played most of the veteran guys in that 04 Olympics appearance. So we didn't get a lot of playing time to really have a say-so on how we did. But, you know, we all wanted the chance to be able to play more and get a chance to win a gold medal. So in 2008, when we did get a chance to play more, we won the gold medal. That was probably the one moment. If I only had to pick one game, it's just pretty awesome to represent your country, playing the game that you love, and be able to hear your anthem get played as you get a gold medal put around your neck in front of the entire world. So one of the special moments in sports.
Just hearing how special that moment is for you, how bummed would you be if it was this year? Looking forward to the Olympics, prepping for it, knowing you're going to be part of such a special group on the court, and then all of a sudden it was canceled. How disappointing would that be?
Yeah, it would be. You know, a lot of these, what people don't realize is the majority of the athletes that qualify for the Olympics have to wait 4 years to get back to it. You know what I mean? They don't get a chance to play on that stage every year. It's a 4-year thing. And then that's if you qualify. So, you know, I think because we have this coronavirus and this pandemic and what we have going on, it's the right move to move it back, because you have, so this is a global pandemic. This isn't just in America or just in Canada. This is all over the world. And to have multiple athletes from different countries coming to Tokyo in the midst of this pandemic is the wrong time for it, because it's so prevalent. It gets transmitted so fast. I think the right decision was made by postponing in a year. But at the same time, I hope that they grant all the players, all the athletes, all the participants that qualified for this year, I hope they grant them access into the Olympics that next summer, because obviously they're deserving of it, especially if they've won qualifying tournaments and matches and meets to be there. But I think it's the right decision just because of what we have going on.
With Carlos Boozer, the American team in 2016 down in Brazil had a pretty famous and well-documented setup. They had a yacht, and they were all living on a yacht. I think a similar setup was in 2012 in London. I don't know if it was on a yacht, but like basically their own hotel, like Four Seasons, top-notch. What kind of lifestyle were you guys living in 2008 at those Olympic Games?
Well, actually, in 2004, we did the same thing. We all of us Olympic athletes were on the Queen Mary 2. It's a huge cruise ship. And so us and the women's team, the U.S. volleyball team, there was, I think there was like maybe 10 teams that were on the boat and their families. So we did the same thing. We were in Athens, Greece. At the time, we were like in war, out of war, in war, out of war at the time. So they were worried about our safety because, you know, at the time, we're out of war with other countries. So, but yeah, it was, in China, it was very different. You know, everything was peaceful, relatively speaking. And we had a nice hotel downtown Beijing, and it was beautiful. But the great thing about the Olympics is that they have an Olympic Village where most of the Olympic participants stay at, the athletes stay at. So we would always go down there almost every night just to come hang out, socialize. These are the best athletes from around the world. So you're hanging out with track stars from Brazil. You're hanging out with baseball players, from softball players to, you know, different sports, track stars again. It's so rare that you get a chance to interact with these level of athletes, and they're all in one place at one time. So, in my personal experience, I would tell all the athletes that qualified for the Olympics to go hang out at the Olympic Village, enjoy your fellow Olympians, and get a chance to mingle and have some fun and hear the stories of what they went through in their own personal journey to get to where they're at now. Pretty cool. And you get to exchange pins and different kinds. It's a pretty awesome experience, man.
Yeah. Oh, it's well documented. I can only imagine being there, especially multiple times like you have been, with longtime NBAer Carlos Boozer. So we were talking about this in the past hour, the Michael Jordan documentary and the Bulls documentary.
Wait,
it's going to be outstanding. But we had a different, you know, we all looked at it differently. My two co-hosts were longtime NHL players, so pro athletes in the room, you know, with all their buddies, with all their athletes, living, you know, a sports lifestyle. Me, on the other hand, I'm looking for, you know, more of the off the court stuff. I know right. What Jordan was all about on the court. I want to know off the court. If you were a teammate, though, and you didn't know the theme of this documentary, would you be nervous? Would you be cool with that? I mean, how would you be handling a 10-hour documentary on your team without maybe knowing exactly what the content is going to feature?
I mean, I'd be excited, to be honest. I mean, think about that team, you know, the Last Dance. That was, you know, an iconic team. You know, that group of guys, that group of talent, that coaching staff. I just think it was one of those groups that we look back on in the history of sports that really inspired the next generation of athletes, especially that played basketball. You know, like I think about, you know, I'm 38 years old. I was in high school in the 90s and then obviously on to college and so on. So that team for me, like watching MJ and Scotty and Dennis Rodman and Phil Jackson coach and how dominant they were that year. And, you know, they were must-see TV. Trust me, in my house, every game that the Bulls played, I was trying to rush in front of my TV, get my homework done so I could tune in and watch them play. And I'm sure I'm not alone in that. I'm sure there was a whole generation of basketball fans, sports fans, that were doing the same thing that I was doing. So if I was a teammate back then, I'd be honored, because if ultimately now my kids and friends can see what happened. And you know, you got to remember, this is a team that was so dominant that the, like, LeBron James and Kobe Bryant and the next generation of great greatness that came into our sport followed these guys. You know, I mean, think about what LeBron and D-Wade did down in Miami, having two dominant offensive players that were also two dominant defensive players, mimicked what Jordan and Pippen did defensively on those Bulls teams. So I feel like it was an iconic team, and for us to have access to see what they did on the court, off the court, in the locker room, on the plane, traveling, I think it just kind of gives us insight into what our basketball or our sports heroes did. And for me, I'm excited to watch. I can't wait to watch. I'm tuning in every Sunday night to check it out.
It's going to be outstanding. I think you speak for everyone. We're especially considering we don't have live sports and we're all at home and we're waiting for something new. I think this is coming at a perfect time, and they moved it up. It's not a coincidence why they did that. But you were teammates with LeBron. I'm sure you're friends with LeBron. You know, we talk about LeBron maybe more than any other athlete. He is a content machine. Whenever he does anything, even if he doesn't do something, we talk about it. How do you feel about that, though, considering your connection to him? The amount of people that love him, hate. I mean, somehow he's polarizing. I don't quite understand it, but how do you feel about it?
Yeah, Bron's amazing, man. Just an incredible guy. When we drafted him in Cleveland his rookie year, we didn't know what we were getting. I mean, I saw him play a few times in high school, watched him play at the ABCD camp when him and Lenny Cook went at it when he was like a junior in high school. But until you get him in practice every day and you really witness his greatness on a day-to-day basis, and then also, you know, obviously I playing against him for so many years as well, seeing the maturation of what he turned into be. I mean, being one of the goats of our game, he's probably on that Mount Rushmore of basketball, one of the one, two, or three. It just depends on how you look at the greatest player of all time. You know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is up there, obviously MJ. Some people love Magic Johnson. LeBron's in that conversation for sure, especially this generation. A lot of you know, my sons and my son's friends, they think LeBron is the best player of all time. But what they don't realize is he's also one of the best teammates of all time. I mean, he one of his biggest talents, maybe his best asset, is passing. It's incredible how many points he's been able to score when he loves to pass the ball. He loves to see his teammates score. He's always been okay with being the quarterback and getting the assists. Never, ever complained about having another teammate's name in the paper. He's one of those guys that makes your entire team better on a super high level because he's driven and he's so talented. You know, he goes to 8-9 finals in a row, beats the Golden State Warriors, which is maybe the best basketball team ever with that group of talent. I mean, that's arguable, of course. There have been some great NBA teams, but they went to the finals 5 years in a row. His 2016 team beats them. Very impressive. But LeBron, as a teammate, one of those guys that always okay to, you know, get the bill at dinner or, you know, come in with gifts for everybody. He had a Beats by Dre deal, gets everybody headphones and speakers every year, great Christmas gifts. Never felt like he was above the team, even though he was by far the best player as soon as he got drafted. Was never a guy that looked down on other people. That's who LeBron is. And then think about what he's done for our community outside of basketball, opening up the I Promise School, giving kids an opportunity that are less fortunate to have a great education, also get a free education in college if you graduate from that school. Just by that, doing that alone, like leading the charge in that respect, is remarkable. He's been an incredible father, very good husband, great role model, great ambassador for our game. But what I tell my kids is that, and they all know Bron as Uncle Bron, but he's an incredible teammate. So no matter how good you get individually, because, you know, we're all athletes, raising athletes. All our kids aspire to be athletes as well. So we're teaching them different jewels at different times. What I tell them is no matter how good you are, you're only as good as the 12th guy on your team, the 15th guy on your team. So if you need to put some time in with him, help rebound for him, LeBron would do that. If you felt like your shot was off, he'll go to the gym with you and rebound for you while you get your jumper right. How many superstars would do that?
Wow.
We got ball boys, we got managers, we got other people that we can call on. He'll be in the gym with you. I remember being in Cleveland, and after his rookie year, one of our teammates was Sagana Jop, awesome defensive player, big-time rebounder. I think he's a scout now for the Jazz or an assistant coach for the Jazz now, but he would constantly invite us to Akron to play pickup every weekend. Like, you know, it's summertime, we got to get better, come to Akron, we get good workouts in, we get pickup every weekend. Like, he was... And then at the same time, fast forward 2008 Olympic team, we're getting up in the morning every day because of Kobe Bryant, wanting us all to work out at 7 a.m. and get a lift in. We're there every day, 7 a.m. LeBron was the first guy in the door with Kobe. The rest of us doing the same thing. He's that kind of leader where he'll put the extra time in for you to get better, but also obviously for himself, but for you to get better. You know what I mean? I think that just speaks volumes of the kind of teammate that he is.
So if there was a documentary behind the scenes, much like the Bulls, what's happening in a couple of weeks here, and LeBron was the center of attention, obviously, how far would he go to let people into his life and understand what's going on, whether it's be going out on the road, dinners and stuff? Like, when would he tell the cameras, okay, you're not following me now?
Think about that. That's a great question. But think about it. And this Jordan documentary that's coming out, There was no social media. I mean, it wasn't like this. I don't know if Facebook was out or anything.
No, not even close.
But there was no social media. You know what I mean? So think about LeBron has always been the guy, the kid from Akron, the guy that would always let you in. He's at home doing TikTok videos with his family. He's bringing you on vacation. He's always been inviting. He's always been a fan favorite because he lets you in. He's never said no to an interview. Never said no to a fan signing autographs, even though he had crazy upper deck deals. and different. I can't remember who all he signed with. He has so many endorsements, but he's always been the engaging superstar, letting other people see his life. And he's so active on social media. He's always tweeting out. He's watching other sports. He's watching other games. He's cheering on other friends in the game as well. He's never been a hater, so to speak. He's always been a very welcoming superstar. And I think if there was a documentary on him, I think he'd let them all in. Like, come out, come hang out with us. Watch us as we play cards. Watch us as we go to the pool. Watch us work out. Watch us go have dinner. He's that kind of guy because you can tell by his social media, he's already that way.
You can find him on Twitter, at Instagram, at Mr. Seaboos, and he's a great follow on both, and he's always great to have on the show. We really appreciate the insight, and stay safe, stay healthy. We'll do this again down the road. Thank you, Carlos.
Anytime, guys. Stay safe up there. I'll talk to you soon.
You got it. Carlos Boozer, always great to have on.
What a great guest.
Yeah, he was fantastic.
Yeah, that's cool what he said about LeBron, too. Like really paints a picture about the teammate stuff. We don't talk about that a lot because he's so isolated. We just talk about LeBron versus, like, Jordan, right, and Kobe and Magic. We don't even discuss LeBron and his relationship with the seventh or eighth guy in the rotation and, you know, treating him well. And, like, it's so easy to – if you're LeBron James, like, you know everyone looks at you differently than your teammates. Like, as great as they might be, even when he was in Miami and Dwayne Wade owned Miami – he's a Hall of Famer, an all-time great. That was LeBron's team. Like, everyone's talking about LeBron. LeBron knows it. Everyone knows. LeBron knows everyone's looking at him first and then whoever is second in line. But if he treats people well and treats people equally and hooks you up in practice and, you know, Christmas gifts and all that kind of stuff, that's going to go a long way, you know, well after he plays or well after he retires, because you're going to get teammates like Carlos Boozer pumping his tires constantly.
No, it's a different side. Like, we forget sometimes, like you say, we judge, you know, LeBron from him talking third person and some of his social media posts, and then you get a guy who's tight with him telling you kind of behind the scenes, like, nah, this guy is salt of the earth. It's nice to have a positive story sometimes when you get in your head what a person's, you know, what you think they're like, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So that was great. We always appreciate Carlos Boozer joining us. Pro Football Hall of Famer Warren Moon will join us on the Brady move from New England down to Tampa. Does he believe Brady at his age, walking into a new atmosphere, a new playbook, new coach, new team? Can it work? Will it work? We'll get into a number of things with Warren. And we've got two more audio battles that we'll play later in the hour. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Warren Moon will join us here in a moment. Pro Football Hall of Famer. Your guy, Noodles, one of the all-time great Edmonton Eskimos.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Warren Moon was an absolute legend there. Absolute legend.
Five in a row.
Yeah.
Five great cups in a row.
Well, like, that's kind of when the Oilers were winning and stuff. That's why they had that
City of Champions. Yeah, City of Champions.
Mm-hmm. I think they took that down, though. I think that sign came down. No, I'm not
what
lying.
What a kick in the pills if they remove a sign like that.
Well, I think they did.
We can't do it anymore, guys. Sorry.
Okay, but you can't call Detroit Hockey Town.
No, well, you shouldn't. You're right.
No.
You're right.
So eventually, the cycle, I mean, if the Oilers have a dynasty and they win a bunch of more cups, then you could probably put it back up and the Eskimos go on a tear again. But there was a stretch there in Edmonton where the Oilers were winning cups and the Eskimos were winning Grey Cup. So, yeah, that was the City of Champions, but that's far removed, gentlemen.
Yeah, it is. That brings up an interesting question, though. The statute of limitations on a moniker like that. If you're going to call yourself the City of Champions and you don't win a championship for a long time, does it just naturally get revoked? And who makes that call? Does the mayor make the call?
What if you're a wrestler and your name's like The Body? Wasn't there like Jesse The Body? Like, what if you start getting some LBs on? Like, when are you not The Body anymore?
You probably lose it. You'll lose it.
The thicker body. That's what they call you. They have to adjust it. That's what it was. You're right. Jesse The Body Ventura. He was the governor of Minnesota.
Minnesota as an independent, too. He was an independent.
That.
And now he's a conspiracy theorist that is, like, he's truly he's way out there with conspiracy theories.
Like him and Ted Nugent?
But a true believer about the government and what they're into. Almost like an Illuminati type Yeah, level of conspiracy theories and what he thinks the government's behind and what they're doing. And he's a fascinating guy. Jesse Ventura, for starters, probably the all-time greatest color guy in wrestling. Like the original, today's actually the anniversary of the first WrestleMania at MSG. It was March 31st, 1985, and I'm assuming Ventura either wrestled in that or he was calling color. But remember WrestleMania 6 when Hogan was fighting or taking on the Warrior at the Skydome? We were both at it, but I've seen the tape. I've watched it. It's on YouTube. Jesse Ventura is calling color with Gorilla Monsoon as the play-by-play guy, and it's
Gorilla
the best.
Monsoon.
It's the best.
That, I mean, there are some great nicknames out there. I think I've told you guys this. I grew up on Stampede Wrestling. There was the Cuban Assassin.
Yeah.
That guy, if you Google that guy, he is a grit grinder.
Okay, we'll look into it. I'm a little bit concerned here because I want to have an uplifting quality conversation with Warren Moon, but I don't know if he would be aware of the news you just broke to our audience here in Toronto, Noodles, that Edmonton no longer goes by the City of Champions because they haven't won a championship in so long.
I think they took the sign down, and it was more like I want to say maybe it was the City of Calgary or people there kind of made a stir as to like, hey, you guys haven't won in a while, you know, smarten up type of thing. I don't remember. I don't want to speak out of turn, but I do believe that sign did come down.
All right. Well, let's bring in the man who was basically established that title in Edmonton, played a primary role, winning 5 straight Grey Cups. The Oilers won a bunch of Stanley Cups. Here is Pro Football Hall of Famer Warren Moon. Warren, how do you react to that news that Edmonton is apparently no longer considered the City of Champions?
You know, it's kind of sad to hear, but didn't they win a cup about 3 or 4 years ago, the Grey Cup?
No, sir. Oh.
Well, they did. They're always in the running. Edmonton's always in the running. Yes, they are.
They've always got a shot.
They got a shot. The Oilers.
When was their last cup?
Oh, we couldn't tell you. You're asking the wrong guys for CFL history.
Come on, you're sportscasters. You're supposed to know these things. You got all that information in front of you.
Stanley Cup was 89, Grey Cup, no idea.
No, yep. I think the Grey Cup, Warren, I think you are right. I think it was a couple of years ago.
There you go.
So maybe they still are
in that status.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, you might have to get back up there and play quarterback.
Well, they didn't win nine championships in 10 years like it happened during our time. But as long as you continue to keep winning championships, you should keep that title.
Yeah, I think you're right. With pro
not
football.
Like it's Winnipeg or somewhere like that.
Yeah, Calgary or some ridiculous spot like that.
Or some city like Toronto.
Watch yourself, Warren. Now you're getting into our ballpark. We got the Raptors. They just won a title, so we got
that
going.
There you go.
For us.
First time ever.
Yep, we got that going for us for
there
sure.
There you go.
First time ever. It sounds like the NFL draft next month is not going to have any fans. No one's going to be there.
7 days long.
So, yeah, I don't think it's going to go 7 days. I think they're sticking to the 3 or 4 days. But if you're Joe Burrow and you know you're going first overall and the crowd's going to be behind you, how disappointing would that be, Warren, knowing that you know it's your year, you're up, and because of the circumstances and COVID-19, you're not going to be able to experience the NFL draft?
Yeah, you won't be able to experience it the way you've probably seen it, you know, growing up and watching guys walk up on the stage, you know, receive their hat of their team and take the big hug, the big bear hug from Roger Goodell. But I'll tell you what, those guys won't be any less happy to know that, especially Joe Burrow, the first overall pick in the draft, no matter where he finds out the news, because that's the most exciting thing about it, that you're the number one overall pick in the draft. You're going to go to a team that's 2 hours away from your house, and you have a chance to help rebuild that team and get them back on the winning track. So, again, for all those young guys, it won't happen the way they always envisioned it, but as long as it happens, they would rather get that call than not get that call and not be able to go through any of the process, because there's a lot of guys who want to be drafted, who think they're going to be drafted, and don't get drafted. So as long as you're getting drafted, the pomp and circumstance can come later.
What is your thought process, Warren, on – going wherever you're drafted. People have short careers. Some people want to play in certain situations. Are you of the belief where no matter what your what the team is, like or dislike the city, you go there, you perform and do your best? Or do you believe the athlete should be able to say, I don't really feel like playing there. I want to play somewhere else, much like Eli Manning did back in the day. I believe it was San Diego.
Yeah, I think it all depends on the leverage that you feel like you have in a certain situation. Some guys are able to do that, like Eli Manning. John Elway did it back when he came out. He was supposed to go to the Baltimore Colts, I think, and he ended up going to Denver. But, you know, it really leaves a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths when that happens. Mm-hmm. And eventually people get over it, but it is something you have to be willing to endure in the beginning, especially when you shun a whole city, and especially if it doesn't work out and you still have to go to that city. That's a big risk that you're taking. So I'm all for going wherever you get drafted, but there are guys that feel differently about it, and if they have the right leverage to get it done, hopefully it does get done. But if it doesn't, boy, it could be a very negative for you for the rest of your career.
We have Pro Football Hall of Famer Warren Moon. A future Hall of Famer will be playing in Tampa this upcoming season. That's Tom Brady. For the first time in 20 years, he's leaving New England. He's leaving what he's familiar with, a culture that he helped establish, a coach who he's familiar with, the playbook that he knows. He'll be 43 years old week one this upcoming season. How confident are you that Brady will be comfortable and will succeed in Tampa?
Yeah, I think he'll be fine. Of course, you'd love to have as much time in the off season to get acclimated to your new city, to your new teammates, to the new offense, and everything that you're going to go through in moving from one city to another. But you know, Tom's been around so long. I think he understands offenses, he understands defenses as well as anybody. And I think between him and Bruce Arians, their head coach, and Byron Leftwich, their offensive coordinator, they'll be able to put together an offense that he can understand, that's going to help take advantage of his best abilities, because that's what they did in New England for him over all those years. And there'll be a lot of symmetry there as far as what they end up running. Again, you'd love to be around your teammates to be able to help establish the new culture and all those different things that Tom Brady will bring to that team. But because he is a veteran, because he has seen so much and understands offenses, I think he won't have that tough learning curve, and I think things will go well for him in Tampa.
Saw a report today that the Chargers are letting the league know that they're sticking with Tyrod Taylor. He's going to be their starting quarterback. In other words, they're not looking into the services of Cam Newton. Now, it's only a report. It's not confirmed. Anything can change overnight. But at this point, Cam is having a difficult time finding a job. Are you surprised by that? And do you think he should find another starter's role in the NFL?
Well, if he's healthy, there's no question. I think Cam Newton can be one of the top quarterbacks in the league. The problem is nobody knows, you know, how healthy he is, because you can't give him the examination by any doctors, especially of your own doctors, and most teams want their own doctors to do the examinations on players. So I know he's sending out, you know, videos and different things like that showing him working out, but I think teams really want to see some x-rays. They want to see exactly what that injury looks like to his foot, and I think there's a lot of worry out there that he's been beaten up so much over the last 4 or 5 years by how much punishment he's taken. What type of shape is his body really in, and how much can he endure? So I think that's a big problem, and I also think because of his personality, he has a huge personality that he brings to a football team, and he's the leader of your team. It's not like he's a wide receiver coming in or a running back or somebody like that. He's your quarterback, and there's a lot of people that might not want all that personality that he brings along with himself to a team as far as being the leader. So I'm sure he's got both of those things working against him.
Warren, we were talking about yesterday the physicality that the quarterbacks had to endure back in the day, back when you played, compared to what it's like today. Do you watch today's game sometimes and wish you had that type of support and protection from the league?
I really do. I mean, in some ways, it's almost makes you laugh at some of the hits that these guys take, and they call roughing the passer, where a guy might be trying to block his pass, and all of a sudden his hand comes off and grazes his helmet, and they get a roughing the passer on that. Those types of things, I just have to laugh at and say, now that's a little bit of overkill. But you know, when you're taking a guy and driving him to the turf when you don't have to, and all your body weight falls on him, things like that, that I could see being called. But there's some things that they take a little bit too far, but that is a position that the league feels like they need to protect, because they're the bread and butter of this league. They're what makes the league go right now, the quarterback position, especially the way the rules have been changed to make the passing game so important. So I understand it, but I think they go a little bit too far in some cases where defensive players can't really be defensive players sometimes against quarterbacks.
Well, that's what we were saying yesterday when we were talking about just the differences in generations and the idea of Tom Brady having to play with Lawrence Taylor with an attitude. Like, Lawrence is not in a good mood, and
no,
Lawrence is feeling it. What's that like?
Yeah, he's been known to break legs of quarterbacks and things like that, and I played against him, and he's one of the four guys that that I wouldn't say I feared when I played, but I really, really respected on that side of the football. So one of those guys that you have to worry about where he lines up each and every play, how you're going to block him, you know, are you going to chip him, are you going to put a tight end over there, are you going to slide your line that way. You worry about him so much that it allows other guys to make plays on their defense. So those are the type of guys that you really fear. Not so much in being scared, but as far as the respect factor of what he can do to just cause havoc for your offense.
Always great catching up with you. Thank you for taking the time, as always, Warren. Stay safe, stay healthy. We'll do it again down the road.
Same for you guys. Thank you very much for having me on. We'll talk soon.
You got it. Warren Moon, Pro Football Hall of Famer. City of Champion.
Yeah, that's so funny. But I
former
just,
City of Champions.
Yeah, right.
Former, apparently. But I'll have to dig around. I'll ask a few buddies from back home to see if that sign is still there. I swear that it came down like a while back. But it's funny that, you know, he verified, like, Lawrence Taylor. Like, they literally had to shift the line to, like, watch this guy, like, this lunatic. And it is. Like, he said it diplomatically, but you know he's sitting there on his couch watching on Sundays going, man, I wish I could have played in today's era.
Oh, and, dude, like how mobile he was, his arm, like his Warren Moon, guys like that, to play in an era like this where if you get that level of protection where you get pass interference calls weren't available to them the way they are today. No. So with his arm, you thought, like, you know that's a part of the NFL playbook now. Just throw it up and hope you get a flag. And that didn't exist back in the day, to say nothing of the protection and just the ability to feel more confident and safe in the pocket, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, chances are the guy's not going to hit you, and if he does hit you, he's going to hit you safely and try to go out of his way to protect you as a quarterback, where, again, Taylor, like Lawrence, was coming around the corner. He was trying to kill you. Like, if he could get you in the helmet, he would get you in the helmet.
Yeah,
and it was celebrated.
And even the generation before that were like Dick Butkus.
Butkus and the boys, like Mean Joe Green, breaking through the line, like, and trying to kill somebody.
There's a nickname for you,
Mean Joe Green. Yeah, the Iron Steel. All right, so we've got two more battles we're going to play in the Overdrive Madness audio bracket. We'll play those, and we will recap what has been a pretty fun afternoon. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050, and on the TSN app.
I'm having a good time. Not.
Glory, Gloria!
The Overdrive Madness Bracket.
This guy's such an idiot here.
Brought to you by Maple Toyota, reminding everyone to follow the advice of healthcare experts, exercise social distancing, wash your hands frequently, and keep the vulnerable in mind. MapleToyota.com. All right, so we played two battles courtesy of the Al's Brothers Farmer Region that you can vote for online at Overdrive1050 on Twitter and at TSN1050 on Instagram. Now we shift over to the Constipator Region, where we have a couple of battles featuring an all-time clip. And this is a high seed and a seed that I have to believe is going to the Sweet 16 at a minimum, probably a lock for the Elite Eight. You guys ready to hear this clip?
Yes.
Yep.
Someone ratted him out.
Never know.
Yeah.
You never know. Never know.
You never know is going deep into the playoffs.
Yeah. Never know.
I feel like that
choking.
I don't remember the reason for that. Were you sick?
No, he had a granola bar, and he was all seized up in his throat, and he just couldn't talk, and he had to squeeze in that last comment. You never know.
Never know.
I think it was either granola or pretzels. Like something was wedged in
one
there.
One of the
I was
two.
Trying to get it out.
Yeah.
It was rough.
Those pretzels were making you thirsty. All right, so never know up against our boy, Lou Brown.
Forget about the curveball, Ricky. Give him a heater.
That's a pretty good battle, but I think Never Know's got a real shot. I think it's going deep. We love Lou Brown, though. That's a really good clip. So that battle is ongoing right now online, and this battle is ongoing again. This first one is a legendary clip. The other one is more we kind of reference it ourselves. We don't play it necessarily all the time, but I feel like we say this catchphrase a lot. Let's get to the first clip in this battle.
It's a pleasure to be with you guys here on the field from up close, just watching Coach Vance Joseph from here. You watch him now on the screen. This diversity in his background is helping him a lot tonight. Quarterback at Colorado, defensive back in the NFL. And here he is having the time of his life.
I'll never forget. I called Duthie. I'm like, why don't they put that poor bastard on the TV? They never put him on again.
No, they made him disappear. That was Sergio Dipp. He was on to basically start the game or first quarter.
Monday Night Football.
Yeah, it was the doubleheader. It was the second one. I think Rex Ryan was calling like color in that game. And you're right. Online, everyone's pleading with ESPN. You got to give him another shot in the second half.
They did not put him back on that TV. I felt so bad for him.
He was on a plane by halftime. Like, you're leaving, and you're never getting back on again. Yeah. We interviewed him, remember? We had Sergio
Dipp. He was awesome.
He was a really good guy. So Sergio Dipp is going up against this classic.
Damn it, Stewartson! Beat! Can't you catch a little chicken? Come on! Move your tail!
Catch the chicken.
I'll tell you what, that was on the weekend, and I watched.
I locked in noodles to everyone, just Rocky 2, Rocky 3. I told my wife, it's not ending. It's just not ending, and she's like, give me a break.
Yeah, Rocky 3. Clubber Lang, forget.
What a piece of business he was.
Do you remember when Mr. T?
Well, he's Chubbs Peterson, I think, too, isn't he, in Happy Gilmore?
No.
That's Apollo Creed.
That's Apollo Creed.
Oh, no, you're thinking of a Mr. T. Yes, Mr. T.
Yeah, Mr. T, as kids, we used to have the fake mohawk. You could buy one.
Right.
And put it on over top and do the chains around your neck. Like, everyone wanted to be Mr. T.
Yeah.
He had an attitude.
He had an attitude.
He was in WrestleMania 1. Him and the Hulkster were a tag team.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, that was the headliner at the first WrestleMania. Which happened back in 85 on March 31st. All right, boys. Do what you do best, buddy.
Take it away for the goodbye. Ne il ne shi I dashi oseyo.
We need some more Korean tomorrow. Come with some Korean for us.
All right.
We need an update.
At Scarborough Nissan, the health and safety of the community and their employees is the number one priority at this time. With extra safety measures in place, Scarborough Nissan will remain open for business, offering the same great deals during the Nissan My Choice sales event. If you need a new vehicle, see their inventory online at ScarboroughNissan.com and book a one-on-one consultation. Scarborough Nissan, driving satisfaction on Eglinton Avenue East at Warden Avenue. Visit ScarboroughNissan.com.
You've been listening to the Overdrive Podcast Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction. The My Choice sales event is on. Choose your bonus up to $2,000 bonus cash, up to 1% rate reduction, or up to 3 payments on them. Scarborough Nissan, Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.